like casual versus competitive pre-modern and like rankings and like all that stuff. Like you share your perspective on it, and like I can share my view and like have a civil conversation, since like you have been, I mean, you have been pretty adamant earlier previously on regarding like pushing for more competitive pre-modern, and I have been pretty adamant on like trying to maintain like the casual competitiveness. Like do you think
Sure.
that is that a thing you want to do, or does it make you uncomfortable?
Oh, absolutely. There's nothing that actually really makes me uncomfortable. I think it is a conversation that is worth having as many times as you can, as long as it's done civilly. And I have every faith that you, me, and everyone else can. There are some people I know and have seen that can't
No,
in general,
I know.
but you can. And I would love to hash that out, talk about.
Hey kids, it's me, Seb. Welcome back to Monster of the Week. This week we'll be talking about pre-modern, and yeah, I guess we'll be talking about PSL and a bunch of stuff, so it's gonna be interesting. This is Constructing Old School Magic, Monster of the Week.
Yeah, this is how we chill from 93-2.
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 And Anton,
yeah,
are you there?
I am here, Seb.
What are we talking about today?
Today, it's you and I who's got the questions.
Yes.
Yes. And
indeed.
Today, it's digital pre-modern day. So you can become the bot you've always wanted to be, Seb. We're going to talk about Magic Online and pre-modern Super League. And with us, we have... one big producer on in that realm. He's been doing a lot of pre-modern content the last year. People have probably heard a lot of question marks by this guy.
And he helped out us a bit earlier also.
He's helped out us out a bit, but he's been super busy in producing video content and tournaments now, so we figured we should grant him the pleasure of not having to produce anything for one episode. So welcome William Hurst to Monster of the Week.
Hey guys, how we doing today?
All good.
All good, all man. Good. How are you?
I'm living the dream all day, every day, and I'm ready to talk about all sorts of nonsense.
Sweet.
Good. But is it true that like you're like you're playing Magic Online and you're playing the like regular also, right? Pre-modern with the webcam-y things, right?
To an extent. My time recently between just regular life with a family, with working and doing things we'll talk about going forward has become limited. So webcam has fallen off a bit. But yeah, I've made Magic Online more so my mainstay at the moment, where I do a lot of things. And then I'll try and get to the occasional in-person here around the Midwest in the United States for events. So I think it's probably...
IRL events.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Yeah.
One day I'll get back to the webcam. But, you know, I think I can't top my run from whenever it was months and months ago. So, you know, I just want to keep that greatness there and not embarrass myself.
You're leaving at the top.
I did leave at the top, and, you know, we tried to keep it right there.
Okay, good.
I mean, it's just bound to happen. Like, we can't maintain the hours put in and grind and deliver results. Like, eventually life will happen, and yeah, it is what it is. But Will, is it you're in Madison, or where are you living?
Yep, I am located in Madison, Wisconsin, here in the U.S. For those who may not know where that is, as we are talking on this podcast, it is kind of it's in what is considered the Midwest. We're one of the upper states, more or less. If you come down from Canada, in the middle of the U.S. map, a little off to the rightish. There we are. We look like a mitten, and people think we like cheese and beer, and that's about all we love. And also,
but you're famous for BK and Michael Hoyp as well in these circuits, right?
Oh yes, in this circus, Brian Kowal, BK, Michael Hoyp, two amazing people and innovators and people who have pushed this format and the reason that I have gotten into this format. So a massive shout out to both of those people here in the Midwest who have really gave me the chance to understand this format and to really come into it and flourish in it.
Have
you played any online Magic Online also pre-modern or
Before that? No. Or are we talking
but Anton.
Oh, Anton, sorry.
Oh, me. Okay. Okay. I've played Vintage some, left it two, three years ago, and I had.
But no pre-modern.
Fluffy kind of borrowed me Replenish, and I started up the client, like I goldfished, and it's like, shit, oh my god, all these clicks and all these like shortcuts that I need to remember again, and I will just. So, no, I like physical cards. I'm a boomer in that sense, but yeah.
But Will, you got into it, and what's the reasoning behind playing Magic Online pre-modern, you think?
Absolutely. I think for me personally, it would be accessibility to matches when I want them. When I found the MOS and pre-modern in general.
Wait, stop there. MOS is an acronym we need to explain for our listeners. Okay.
Yes,
what
I'm
MOS?
Sorry. The MOS is the Magic Online Society. It is primarily run through Discord. It does not only do pre-modern. It does pre-modern. It does Pauper. It does, I believe, Vintage. It does all the formats to varying degrees. And they were really the only name in town for Magic Online. And I loved the webcams initially when I first got into them and doing them and trying them. But it just wasn't, you know, you'd get your matches done and say you didn't do well. You don't have any more matches until the next month. It allowed for me to get that itch in because I dived headfirst into this format. I saw it. I loved it. Here I go. And it was what I primarily used outside of testing at the local shop, Misty Mountain Games, to test. Probably the first thing I ever got known for in this format was I won the first Misty Mountain event with a slide deck that had some choices in it. It certainly had some choices in it.
Let's say questionable choices. But,
yes, absolutely. And that's primarily where I did
but
a lot of
But you won,
testing.
So...
Yes. Whether that is through skill and luck or some combination of the two, who knows at this point. But... the Magic Online Society's pre-modern part of it really helped me dive into that because they have, leagues there, and then through that you find pickup matches and where to go, and it was just a really nice community to start jumping into, and it was simplistic for me who had used Magic Online before for other things to kind of jump into it, so the clicks and everything didn't quite bother me. Yeah,
but so wait, how long have you played pre-modern? When was the first?
Oh, God. I think 2001? 2001.
21.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
We were just coming out of the, kind of the massive stages of the pandemic. We still had masks and everything. Yeah. I'm trying to remember. I think it was 2021. When I came into it, whenever the first Misty Mountain event was that you find on TC Dex is the general time period in which I found it.
Okay. Yeah, but that's my view of it is like, you just came in and then like, boom, you really, really like took pre-modern by storm. So, it's cool.
I think like webcam play overall really made it because of the pandemic, actually, because we had like big tournaments and stuff going that route.
Yeah.
A lot of people were not ever like looking into doing, webcam play with old school card. It sounded so like contrary to what you wanted to do, but Yeah,
we had left no choices.
Yeah. So and it wasn't as bad as people thought. Hopefully. No. So.
But yeah, but
it's going on strong in some circles still.
Absolutely. And what you're lifting here, Will, like it is one of the flip sides of Webcam Magic and the monthly's structure is like scheduling with your opponent can be a hassle sometimes. Like I still love playing webcam online tournaments, but like the scheduling is sometimes a bit sucky. So I imagine it's easier or more smooth via Magic Online, or
it can be, and it has certainly grown over time to be easier. And we can dive more into those differences and the pros and cons later to both sides of it. But there is an aspect of it. If I get done with work, I'm done with the kids. I come here to my office space at 8, 9 o'clock at night. Typically, I can find something to do. Whereas webcam, it's like, can my opponent really be here at 9 p.m. Central Standard Time? Are they busy? It has its advantages, certainly.
Oh. Cool. And should we start there? Do you want to like talk about the Magic Online Society, like the monthlies or the tournament structure there, and we'll take it from there?
Yeah, certainly. So the Magic Online Society is, as I said, mostly through Discord. And search for it in Google, you'll find it most likely. And Premodern is part of that. Over the last few years, Premodern has grown in this space quite a bit, to the point where I think it would be safe to say that Premodern is probably the more dominant of the formats within the MOS, at least from what I have been able to see. It's really been a fantastic growth, and you have to shout out a lot of the mods for that, for putting in that work. I mean, you have people like Pablo Marcos, otherwise known as Paul Master, Cyberpunker, that's Stanley Chen. I mean, Bobo, who helps run a lot of it, Bobo Fraggles, I believe, is an amazing man. There's just been so much work put into it to help grow it. That it's been amazing.
And I've seen a bunch of content, I guess, from there, but also people playing there going online, like on YouTube and stuff like that also. So
yes,
that probably helped. I guess first off, people needed to get into Magic Online playing Premodern or those formats, whatever.
Exactly.
And then the next step is like having content and stuff surrounding it makes it more, the more people getting into it, I guess. Because I was worried in the beginning there. I have one friend here, local, a guy who plays like Magic Online, I guess MOS also. Mm. And I was like, are there enough players even? And stuff like that. But clearly it's working, so that's nice.
It certainly is. And it's some of the advantages to the MOS and the pre-modern, and they've kind of gotten to the big point. I'm trying to find it right off the top of my head, and I didn't have it pulled up. They've kind of branded them, putting a brand within a brand. I'm looking for it right now. I'll find it eventually. But one of the advantages of Premodern on MTGO is
graveyard order.
Graveyard order, certainly. Yeah. Sure. It's the card pricing. How about that? We can start with pricing, right?
Yeah.
So one of the reasons that it may be nice to see it there is things like a cradle, things like a Mox Diamonds, fetches, anything like that. You think of your pricey ones. For whatever reason, whether it's availability or however it was done, like I can get a playset of cradles for, I think, maybe $40 at the most.
Yeah.
At the very, very most. Diamonds somewhere in there. And additionally, with how it's gone and things have gone, there's rental services.
Yeah.
if you're just getting into it. So I think accessibility to decks that have some of the pricier cards that normally you can't play or have a harder time getting in physical Magic is a big draw to come and try them out there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's true. That's true for Vintage in a sense also. I was very into Vintage.
I mean,
like 5-10 years ago, maybe.
Magic Online saved that format, basically. Like, for sure.
Exactly.
Tracking back to your statement, Seb, regarding like players playing. I saw, was it Chris DiBiase? Is that his name?
Yes.
Last name? Yeah.
Yep.
That's how you pronounce it.
Exactly.
He shared some statistics on, and it's like steady around 70 players now in the MOS tournament. So like that's huge.
It's correct. They've been growing. And that's 70, I believe that's 70 active players. So not those who sign up and don't play a match, but 70 active players. And I think I just saw Pablo Marcos post up that we reached 200 actively played matches within this last league. So
cool.
I'm still a little bit foggy on how exactly they're ordered, but it's gotten big enough to where, so there's bi-weekly tournaments that are essentially, you play six games, and it's not against certain opponents. It's like you say, looking for a game, you find opponents, just don't play the same opponent twice. So there's the weekly leagues. Those leagues lead into a showdown series where if you did well in two leagues, you qualify for that. So the competition gets even stiffer. That's 16 people. And then I believe there's the Champion of Champions series that the winners of those events, the showdowns, come together and face off. So there's like a multi-pronged way of playing, so every match matters, right? I could go 3-3, but those 3 points are points that lead me into other things. So it incentivizes you to finish your matches. And for a more complete breakdown of this, and I'll get you guys all these links if you want whenever you post it, and what I was referring to earlier is the pre-modern community has gotten so big, it's kind of got its own branch off of the MOS called the MTGO Community Pre-Modern Series is how it is branded. It's got a website, just premodernseries.org, has all your information there. They have a Twitter. Chris DiBiase really, really worked well with others to put this together. So that's generally how it is. It's you have something on the bi-weekly, you have pickup games, and you have things that lead into other events. So there's incentive to keep playing.
But can you drop, if you're 0-3 in the bi-weekly, like, can you drop
out? 100%.
Is that fine? And you're not, like, punished by it?
Oh, God, no. No. It is not taken to that length at all. And nobody shades it. People get busy. I mean, that happens. I've gone 0-3 drop, and I've gone 3-0 drop because I just don't have time. Doing well, but whatever. Can't finish it. And then the newest addition, obviously, is the take on what a lot of formats have on Modo is the challenges that they've been doing the last 3 months. These are probably your purest form of tournament Magic in pre-modern you're going to find. It is Swiss rounds. Timed Swiss rounds, and it's a little bit different timing on Modo, which is, you know, it is what it is. It's the platform. There are
like more of a chess timing.
Yeah, it's chess clock timing. And we actually just had a really interesting thing happen in the last challenge, which happened actually yesterday, is we had a simultaneous thing in the challenge where an opponent attacked for lethal, his opponent tapped a City of Brass because of clock, and the clock ticked to zero, so they won simultaneously.
Okay.
And Modo classified that as a draw, so it was a 1-1-1.
Okay.
It is a one in a million, like, I've never heard of that happening. And it was like, we were talking as people in there, and I am a part of the pre-modern community there. I'm not actually a mod. I don't want to be a mod. I think they do a great job. I will help how I can. I want to promote them as much as I can. But we were talking in there, and it's like, how do we handle this? Because one person's player, one player's screen certainly said they won. The other person's screen said they won. Moto, if you look at their listing, said it was 1-1-1. And the overall factor in that one was we have to go with what Moto is reporting. We understand it's just a weird thing. But to come at Gumbag, it's just a platform where it's easy to play. And this challenge is really cool because it's, as I said, purest magic. It's Swiss rounds. It is, there are no intentional draws at the top.
Yep.
So if you go 6-0, it's an illegitimate 6-0 against other 5-1s or whatever. No going, you know, 3-0, 3 or 4-0, 2 and whatever. And then it's
you can do an intentional draw.
You cannot.
Okay.
Now, if you wanted to scoop in a person into the top 8, you can, but that's still a loss for you. Maybe it hurts you in the end. Who knows? So I really like that they've added that there, and with that there is a cash prize through the generosity of donors through Magic Online Society and through sponsors, and I think that's okay too. It adds a little bit. It adds that more competitive flavor, I suppose, that some people do enjoy. So I think it just has Magic Online right now in that society just has all the flavors that you could want. You can play a brew, you can play competitive. It's easier to get cards in some cases. And you don't also have to, for the most part, you don't have to worry about rulings and what's going on in the stack and how you do it. And trying to, because we all know on webcam, if you're playing a deck that's a lot of stacky stuff, if you're playing against an opponent who doesn't have a good setup, maybe it's not, that's not how they think and they're organized, it can be hard to track some of that. And it can lead to some unfortunate things that happen. And MOS clears some of that up, at least.
And but then again, also you need to be really clear with how the client works.
Yes,
misclicks but happen.
They do.
I think
they do.
If people haven't tried Magic Online, I think most people have MTGO. That is not the arena one. I think it's also one of the best ways of learning.
For sure.
Magic. Not only because of rulings and what you're saying, Will, but because like every face, every trigger, everything is so clear. Even though it's a, we should be honest with also that it's a janky program.
It's a shitty client, but
it's not amazing. It's not amazing.
It's like, I don't know what they call it when you stack things upon it, and when new sets comes, it could like really rearrange. And there are some cards, right, that are like you can't really play on Modo, right?
That is, and we will be clear that yes, there are drawbacks to Modo. It is not the perfect solution. As we all know, Hermit Feb and the Cabal around them are amazing people who have made that deck amazing, and it should be part of every meta. Unfortunately, it doesn't work properly. So that's out. Things like Skeletal Scrying for a long time did not work correctly. There's other things like, what is the white in Sacred Ground?
Yeah, words of Wisdom, right?
Words of Wisdom. I think that's bugged, but what's the white enchantment that... if your lands get destroyed, they come back.
Yeah, Sacred Ground.
Yep. Sacred Ground. That doesn't work. And that's something that is, you know, for something like a white prison-y deck or even the black white decks that are coming out now, more of the
meta, Sacred Ground is
yes, pretty good. It's one of the few answers that they have to an Armageddon. So there are it is not a perfect system by any means.
No.
I want to add on that as well, like unfortunately, like combo decks that go like infinite, like you can't really play Turtle Splash, you can't really play Alluren because like it's too many clicks. And like
the
if your opponent,
horsemen.
but not even Four Horsemen. It's like, just like you have to click a lot of times. So like IRL, you just say I'm gonna repeat, and you are dead. Yeah. And it's like pack it up. But if you, since there's a chess clock, I assume people will abuse it since it's within their rights.
There are opportunities in which you can. I'll break it down into this. I would say the vast majority of people who play online, just as in paper, if you can demonstrate the loop, they get it and they move on. I would say a good 85-90%. I will say you are right. It is certainly within your rights as a player to use the clock to your advantage. Now, I play stasis. There are times where I can certainly play a certain way that makes that happen. There are people who call that gamesmanship. There are people who call that shooting. There are people call it any number of things. Where I think I get antsy about it sometimes is like if I'm in just playing a pickup game, if I'm playing in just one of the like bi-monthly or bi-weekly leagues and I'm doing something somebody decides to use clock to their advantage when they're in an obvious losing position and they're not going to, I kind of wince at that. I wish you didn't do that. And I move on.
Yeah.
Don't be that guy who doesn't.
People were afraid of him. We were his teammates and we were afraid of him. And there was just fear.
Catch the ball when I throw it to you. I just threw it to you.
Ignore this guy. He's dumb, stupid. He's overplayed.
The fear factor of MJ was so, so thick.
Yeah, let's not get it wrong. He was an He was a jerk. He crossed the line numerous times. But as time goes on and you think back about what he was actually trying to accomplish, you're like, yeah, he was a hell of a teammate.
He was pushing us all to be better because he wanted to win. And guess what? It worked.
We kind of needed that, you know what I'm saying? I needed him to be the bad guy, the tough guy.
But I will caveat that now that there are things in which there are the challenges where there is an actual prize or something like a higher stakes one, like the Champion of Champions, like these are people who've put in the time and they're being competitive. I'm okay there. Like, you're with a group of people who know what's going on. They wouldn't be there if they were not at that point.
Yeah.
That I find it okay. Because within Modo, like, the only infinite combo in there, I haven't looked at Turtle Splash, but the only really infinite combo in there that would be a problem is, like, life combo. Like Dara Spiritualist, something like that. Like something like people play learn. Like, is it a lot of clicks? Sure. But you have various ways to yield to triggers, different things like that, so you're not obviously taking up the time. And that is, if you're going to play it competitively on a platform like MTGO, that is probably a lesson that has to be learned, especially if you know you're playing that deck or against that deck. Like if I'm playing against Stasis or if I'm even playing Stasis, almost any trigger that comes up game one or whatever that I don't care about, that I know I'm never going to respond to, auto yielding. Like that just saves my clock. So I think there's a lot of nuance to it. And then where I draw the line is, do you know that you are playing in a more competitive sphere with anything on the line, whether that is money in this case, and there is something to that, or like, I want to be the Champion of Champions. There is something to wanting to be that.
But I kind of want to respond to this, if you don't mind, Will.
I don't mind at all.
Like, because this is also kind of infringing on the whole, I don't know, community concept of Primordial as a like community created format. And yeah, sure. I mean, everybody wants to win, of course. But like, even if it's high competitive, is it just like to accept? Is it like we just accept that people get to be shady with a clock and whatever just because like it's on Magic Online? I feel like still I would be pretty upset if like my opponent didn't scoop if I revealed the infinite loop or whatever, if I'm going for that deck. Like, I think it's actually like kind of douchebaggery to do. And but you're kind of defending it here. So like, is that the norm? Cause I'm obviously the outsider here. So I like, really, this is news to me. Like I
don't think you're an outsider. I think your view is valid.
Yeah,
I truly do. And yes, even as a person who accepts it, well, I look at it as like, man, why couldn't you just let that go? But yeah. To me personally, I put things in lines, and that doesn't mean that there's shades of gray on either side of it. Mm. I know if I'm putting myself in a position where I know it's going to be competitive more than the normal. And by what I mean competitive is there is something here that I want to win. Of course I want to do well in a monthly, but if I don't, cool, I don't. Fine. Yeah. But if there's like, I would like to win this challenge. If I went to a Misty event, I would like to win this. Not only because there is something tangible to it, and I'm a competitive person, but because I want to show that I am the best currently here at this tournament. That might be just a mindset difference between myself and you, Anton, where we how much do we value that, right?
No, but believe me, Will, like I of course want to win as well, but like there's just a I don't know, there's a line where we do not cross that line, I feel like. Stuff like that, like we don't win on the technical details of like a chess clock when I've obviously lost, but like I know you have to
It's the line isn't clear still, because what's different from what I kind of like with the doing it on Magic Online instead of playing like the tabletop webcam thing is that it's on time, like in the tournament. If you're having obviously an IRL tournament, they're timed also. So you need to take in account stuff like, okay, do I have time to play game three? Have I won game one? And I think that's valid, at least, at the very least, regarding where to draw the line.
Absolutely. Don't get me wrong. The chess clock is
but
amazing.
I just wanted to get into it. So if I'm playing Will, he's playing Stasis, and he's taking a long time losing, I guess. Mm. I think that's on him. That's on you then, Will, right?
Yeah.
Because, okay, I'm winning this game. And if I really think I'm winning this game, that's I think you should have that in the also. Like, so you have to value the time in that sense also, I guess.
Yeah. So is this – maybe I'll say this, I guess, in – what's a good example? Stasis is actually a really good example for a lot of this, I think, because it leads to some of these thoughts. So say me and you, Anton, or whoever was playing, Stasis is up a game. That game one took X amount of time, a decent amount of time on the clock. We're in game two. And I, as the Stasis player, am losing game two. But I know that you are probably going to win this game, but I know it's going to take you more time on this clock than it is to win. Is
that is that your side at least?
No, no, no.
Is that
no,
gamesmanship or is that shady?
I hear you. Yeah. No, good argument. Good counterpoint. Absolutely.
So like, it's if I had to draw a line, right? If I had to draw a line, and we're going to make this black and white. And that's where I'll probably be at, because shades of gray are really hard to argue.
Yeah.
If I had to draw a line, my level of how seriously am I going to use all the tools I have available within the rules? Like, slow playing isn't a thing that's within the rules that you should be doing. Like, slow playing, that's why there are judges who can come say, hey, you got to speed up, right?
Yeah, you're right.
If there is something tangible on the line, whether it's a card, store credit, monetary, that's probably my line. It's like if I can physically win something.
Oh. Yeah, it depends on
I think
so
that's,
many factors.
It does. I think that's my
it's
line.
It's very hard. Yeah, like from where you're standing, Anton, I agree that like I'm clearly not winning this. Sure. Even if something is online, I don't really care. I think I can scoop in many senses. But once again, if you choose to play a deck that's not maybe doing the combo, but it takes a lot of time getting there, I guess that's at least something that I'm also a player that really hates slow players. I'm a really quick player. And it's not good, actually, because you're doing a lot of wrong decisions. Usually, I just go by gut a lot.
Yeah.
So, whatever. I kind of like the chess clock aspect of
it. Yeah, no, but I agree. Like, this is... But as said, I'm an outsider here, so like I'm not sure where to draw the line, but like I know that's a thing I would want in the client to basically like enable. Like, this is an infinite loop. The opponent can accept a scoop or whatever. I have no idea
I think that's actually what everybody would like.
Yeah.
Because if you got to, everybody would like that. That's a clear thing. It's it's everybody would like that. The client has some flaws that make it not possible to do that. And is it easiest if you can demonstrate it? Sure. But I don't fault a person. I can't fault a person for doing that.
No, I hear you. Yeah.
So
should we move into
next
topic?
I like these conversations.
Of course. But we have some other stuff that we would like to get to also.
Sounds good.
How about a bit of PSL?
Yes, the PSL. Great. Good times.
What can you tell us about your involvement in that?
What I can tell you is I blame Tom Metelsky for absolutely everything.
Always Tom's fault.
It's Tom's fault. So Tom is a wonderful Magic player and just a wonderful guy in general. Yeah. I've come to really love Tom and his opinions, and we'll talk on occasion, and a couple times. He would mention, you know, God, it would be kind of cool to do like a vintage Super League-ish thing or something like that. Cool little concept on Modo, because it is a platform that allows that. Yeah. You know, whether you like to play in Modo or not, most of the time it's pretty easy to see what's going on. It's no fuzzy webcams, it's any of that, things like that. So it is a good platform for it, but how do you make it exciting, right? Like, because just watching the gameplay without any commentary is like, whatever, cool. And Tom would mention that a couple times, and that's a cool idea. Wish somebody would do it. And I don't know what overtook me this last time Tom said it, where he said it to me, and I was like, yeah, I can do that. At which point I dived headfirst with a weight tied to my ankles into this pool of, okay, now who do we pick to put in this? How do we do it? How do we do rounds? And it's just like, initially, it all seemed so very simple. And by the time you really got into it, it's like, oh, I've committed to getting the recordings of, the editing of, getting commentary for 24 matches just in the pod rounds. Yeah. And initially, this plan was to be one round of pods, then another round of pods, then eliminations. So that was 24, 48, and it was like 50-plus matches. I was doing well, but I did not evaluate it correctly to how much time that this would take. And I think it is something that would be solved going ahead, but... The PSL in and of itself, the Pre-Modern Super League, is based on, you know, at least loosely on the Vintage Super League. We have 16 players, 4 pods. They play, in this case, a round robin of the pods. Those who are 2X move on to a top 8, and you play the top 8 to a finish, a single elimination, or single match elimination. Players choose a deck list for their pods. If they make the elimination rounds, they choose another deck list if they choose. And then
I want to brief on that later, but go on.
Yes. And then you just play it through. We got commentary on it. We present it on Twitch. Then they'll go on YouTube. And the goal of this is to celebrate pre-modern in the online space, because we have things like Lobster Crown. We have things like Euro, which are amazing events. We have the monthlies. We have the Spring Fling. By the way, I think signups are up for that. So
Yeah, they are.
Go get signed up for that if you're not. Fall Brawl, PSS. You can't mention that. The Euro version of the PSS, which Anton Tisk need you to get not busy and bring that back.
Epic.
The Epic. I could not remember the name. So you have all these things, but there really wasn't anything for, you know, Magic Online. Yep. And it's a space that has the ability to grow in such a different way than those other ones, with visibility, with the ability to edit, get commentary. So that was the thought behind it, kind of the basis of it, is can we make this work? And, yeah, I'll leave it kind of there, and then you can guys ask me the questions, and we'll kind of trail our way through.
So what did Tom do?
He suggested it. He suggested it and then said, okay, am I in it? And then...
he just wanted to play, right?
Yeah. Good day, Will. That's next. Wait, you took the bait, you took the hook, got right in there, and you just went with it.
Well played, Tom. Well played.
Well played.
Well, I can share my experience of this type of thing, because Epic, the European pre-modern Invitational Challenge, was the same thing, basically, but we have webcam. The European version of PSS, basically. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of work.
Yes.
And we are usually at least two people behind production, and you're doing this all on your own. And, well, you did one thing. You didn't decide to play it right. You're just producing.
Oh, God, no. I couldn't imagine trying to play this. No, I did not play it. Solely behind the computers for it.
Yeah, I think that's a smart move. But, I've been doing some commentary on a few matches with you and with Flint and with Danny DeRoy. And it's been super fun. Like, very cool. Like, the thing you've done, like, editing the matches. So it's like around 20, 30 minutes. With a bit of like 2 minute breaks to talk about decks and whatever, and we see all the hands on most players, at least. Like, the concept is really sweet and really educational for as a viewer. So I think this is filling a void.
That's
another
thing
saying.
Going for it. Like, you can see the players' hands. That's nice. Also, yeah.
Yeah. But what's at stake here? Like, how did you choose the participants? Let's start there. Like, what's your idea behind it all?
Exactly. So there was, I really thought hard about this. It's like, how do I balance bringing out the best on the online world with bringing in names that are maybe not a complete mystery to some people, or even names that are known outside of pre-modern, to bring new eyes in? It was really interesting to put together, and I reached out to a lot of people. And we got a kind of healthy mix. I mean, we have mainstays like Mike Arnold. We have mainstays like McLean Denny, Stanley Chen in there. Like, these are mainstays people know. And then we had things like, okay, now we have some national champions in here. We got Javier Campo from the Spanish Nationals. Or was he Euro? Was it Euros or Spanish?
Spanish.
Yeah. We have people like Demian Vernieri, who is the South American champion. Okay, now we're getting global-ish with it. And then we have a tier of names people know. Caleb Durward was kind enough to join us. Rebel, who is primarily known more in the CDH community, but has dabbled in it. So that's a name people know and get to see. And what it led to was a really interesting mishmash of matchups you wouldn't see a lot, and different ideas. And the breakdown of what was brought was really not what you would think it would be. It was really interesting to see the decks people brought.
But pause there. So, like, did you give them any, like, hook? Like, this is a showcase event, like, bring diversity. Or this is, like, a spike event. We want to see the, like, top-tier decks. Or, like, did they get to do anything? Like, did you have any vision there?
They got to do anything. And the way I left it, and I'd have to look at my exact wording, was, you know, having an invitational event that will be... I think at the time I said streamed because I was cocky and overconfident, and soon realized that was not actually going to happen, at least live. It's going to be streamed. It's going to be on YouTube. It's going to be promoted on Twitter. So there's bring whatever you want. There was no limitation on decks. But I think the caveat is, if you're going to be put, at least to a lot of people, if you're going to be on stage, if you're going to be at an event that is public to people, that are people seeing, can be watched forever, I think a lot of the times that leads to people playing, I can play a fun deck, but this fun deck actually has to be capable of winning its matches. So yeah. you're not going to get, like, maybe a dirty Crush. Pile that doesn't win a match or is not competitive, right? At least that's the way my mind works.
Yeah, but I think, like, this is interesting depending on who you pick as participants, right?
Sure. Now, I picked people who I know. That is a fair point. I picked people who I know can do decks that are different but are also very – and also have a drive to do well and showcase that they can win with it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, a good example, Mike Arnold.
Yeah, exactly.
Brought Merfolk to the event. Now, Merfolk isn't your standard tier one deck at all, but man, does that deck have game against a lot of things. And if you look at that pile of fish, you don't think it's going to do much, but then it does. So that's I did go into it as mine. It's like, do I know that Mike Arnold might bring one of those sorts of decks? Or, you know, Caleb Durward has a different take on pre-modern than a lot of traditionally is. Rebel as well, different take. And then I picked people who I knew would bring their staple decks. Stanley Chen, Survival Madness. So I did try and put that together. And there are some names I wish I could have got on there that didn't pan out. And maybe in the future that they will. But I did put a good amount of thought into how I put this out there to try and balance, hopefully balance a creativity versus a creativeness and showing off the flavors of pre-modern with the competitive aspect of it and trying to merge those and hopefully get a group of people who it worked with.
I think I'll share this view with you. Like when we did Epic, we basically had, then it was three decks per player. So we had 30 decks and it's like, we wanted to show like, first and foremost, this is a showcase event. Like we want to people to get the pre-modern experience, but we also want kind of like viable decks. So like pick your decks. But then we had the whole thing with you can't play more than four copies of the unified rules, basically.
Yep.
So that made some changes. But like it really comes down to who you invite, right? Like you could, if you go with like eight people that you know, they will bring this deck, then you know like that won't work. Even though I love those eight people, like it will be a more fun experience overall, I think, with more diversity or showcasing. So like leaving, you have to make these sacrifices when you organize this. Like you can't just take your first eight names, I guess, is what is my point, right?
Yes, I think you're right. And if my goal with this is to bring in eyes, like I would like to bring eyes to this that, you know, even if it's one out of 10 people who see it, even if a person brings a deck that is not tier one, but it is competitive, I wanted to pick people who are at least going to bring a competitive deck because people are okay. How to phrase this? People are okay with seeing something lose as long as it is competitive and they could see an area it could have won. If that makes sense.
I hear you. I think Stanley Chen is like the perfect example of like playing a man. I mean, obviously he's a deck specialist now, like, but Madness is not an archetype that anyone has taken seriously as competitive, like forever since Stanley came in basically. And getting like him on with showcasing that, I mean, I love it. Like that's great. So
That was at least the hope with the list. And I think we put together a pretty good list for this first iteration.
And you mentioning you can watch it on YouTube, right?
Yep. Yes, you can.
Maybe that kind of brings us into, because you had another topic there, Anton, you want to talk about paper versus online meta. I don't know if PSL has, it probably lives its lives on its own, I guess. But if we would add everything together, there probably are some differences. You're already mentioning one of them, Will, that it's easier to get the more expensive cards.
Yep.
And that probably does a bit for the meta, right?
It does. So my experience with this is there is differences. One is built in because Feb does not count in this meta, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, you're
so
right,
that's a
huge chunk
of a combo deck that's gone. There are other little things that don't work. Like, I'm not sure if the Tropical Enchantress deck would work currently on Modo. Yeah. So you factor that in. So it is not perfect. Yeah. Card availability is certainly a thing. Like, if you go online, you see a lot more, or you can have a habit of seeing a lot more distribution of Elves, or say, like, Groatog, or, you know, Mox Diamond, specifically Mox Diamond-y decks. You can see a higher concentration of those. But I think that would be really the main difference, to be honest. I mean, people still play Sly. I think it's just that you see, like, if you went to an event.
Yeah, that's more Sly on big, at least larger events, IRL events.
Yeah, and I think also, and I think also if you go to, like, a bigger event in real life, you'll see Elves maybe once. You know, maybe you'll see Goblins once. Like, you're going to see them once, maybe twice in an event, usually, in real life.
I'm so biased, or, like, not biased, but, like, my European view is, like, we play Elves, at least in Europe. Like, we play a lot of Elves there.
It doesn't seem to be as big then in the U.S., at least from
it really isn't.
I mean, it's all skewed because you have people like Ali and... what is the other gentleman's name? Not Pablo Suarez. It's other really big Elf player. I'm blanking on his name.
Fluffy, Olerola.
Those Pablo guys. Suarez. Of them.
We have Frank and Jens.
Those were names. Yeah. Like, you have these people who, like, they have it. They're there and they can do it. I don't know how many people in the U.S. just have Cradle sitting around, even gold bordered. Like, I don't know if that's maybe how they got distributed. I don't know. But it doesn't seem to be as big. And I think even in Europe, would it be safe to say if I go to a big thing like Euros, I'm not going to sit down against Elves probably twice in a row, right? For the most part?
No.
No, you have to expect, like, Dreadnought, Sly, Goblins more, I guess.
Yeah.
But, like, so it's still there's going to be. Yeah.
Yeah, it's dispersed. Like, on the Modo meta, I was just playing Stasis this last league. And I think I played, it was either two or three Elves decks in a row. Oof. Rough. And it was just like, there are just times when people are like, I feel like playing Elves. I can go rent Elves. And you can see big clusters. Like, you'll see it, like, with Francisco's red-green deck. It blew up. And he's been a major factor, let's not even lie, about swinging metas in general, but online metas, because that's where he plays a lot. Like, after that happened, red-green. Like, you can see a trend bubbling. Because it's easy to get the cards. I think that has to be the reason. Is you'll see a lot more clumps of the same powerful deck because it's easier to get the cards quickly on Modo. That's the big difference. People in IRL
really makes sense.
Yeah, people in IRL maybe have one or two. Most people in IRL have maybe one or two main decks that they have put together. And then the rest is maybe they'll have, like, proxy versions to test with friends against or something. Whereas on Modo, if I wanted to, I could spend $600-$700 and have everything I would ever need ever to play pre-modern.
Okay.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, it's also such a big part of the, like, Discord community. I feel like the average player there has 14 pre-modern decks.
That's true.
But overall, like, if we talk 10,000 of players, MTGO will for sure be cheaper and way, way quicker to get your deck. But I feel like we should really, really praise Francisco Paluszek here. Like, his content is, like, why MTGO is a good platform, basically. If you do content that way, where you explain your, like, plays and you go through your decks and, like, you see the gameplay live, like, it's fantastic. So I get the increase of participation in the online events these days. Yeah. Like, it's great.
And I think there's something to that in general, and we've seen steps of this, right? So even when I came in, like, you had, you know, the Epic, you had the PSS, you had monthlies that were going on, and you had a names associated with yourself, Mike Hoyp, Flint, Andrew Walker, all that stuff. You had these names, but it was still niche to a certain extent. And then a big step, I think, honestly, and I don't know if I can beat this horse enough to use a very bad phrase, but it's what I'm going with. This is all I got, is Fran coming in from where he was. Fran was a very known quantity within, it's modern, and please, Amulet Titan. Yeah. He had a big following, and he got introduced to pre-modern. Now, when he comes to pre-modern and starts doing content videos, is it maybe 10 of his people watch? I can't remember what it's called, this whole effect or whatever it's called. Like 10 people watch. If you can get two of them, they bring more people. And it builds off of that. But it takes a following to start that boulder rolling. Yep. So you have that. So
I think we call it snowball effect. But
Is it actually a snowball effect? Fair enough.
I think so. Yeah.
His following brings that in. Yep. He has a name. And then, not solely because of him, but it is a big part, it starts branching out more. And now we're even at a next critical juncture. Name value means something. For those who say name value doesn't mean anything, and I've heard people say it, doesn't matter the name, doesn't matter if you won what you're doing it, I respectfully disagree with you.
Yeah, I agree.
Like Andre Mengucci just won an event with Elves, and now he's doing kind of, that is a name. That is, I believe, a world champion, right? I think, maybe.
I think so,
Something of that nature.
But not really, only really that. Not only a good player, but also a popular content creator.
Yes.
I think he's been doing consistently. People have like his voice in their head. Like, hey, welcome to another video.
Yes, they do. So that clearly, snowball effect. Sorry, go ahead, Seb. I apologize.
No, but that was you mentioning earlier also the Vintage Super League was like the origins, I think, to a lot of these. And those had a lot of famous people on them.
I got hooked in Vintage by VSL. Like, that was huge for me. Like, Rich Shea was a huge, huge icon in my house.
I think today, if we talk about big names and stuff, I think like EDH and stuff like that are more popular, and people like to see just regular famous people playing Magic in those settings. So it's not the same type of Magic being played, but we had Randy Bueller on. I think we talked a bit about the Vintage Super League then, but that was on the first podcast I had, the Flipping Orbs. I think people can listen
to
it.
Did you have Randy Bueller on?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
We had a bunch of weird stuff going on. But but anywho, I agree with you, Will, that you like to see, and also you like to, it doesn't matter what type of, in some certain instances, there's a player that's really good with a deck that people like to keep attention to, regards to, like, what's the latest take on that, or whatever. It wouldn't matter as much if that player won as another player would win with that deck in a big tournament. It would mean more for the quote-unquote famous player in that sense, doing something different.
Exactly. So I think those are necessary is not the word, good steps that the format has taken by finding something that attracts people with those score names to play it and take it seriously. Like, we'll get into it probably later in a later discussion. I think there's a big difference between that and having high-stakes pre-modern events and what that brings in. I think there's a major difference between those two aspects, which can have a same effect in theory of bringing new people in, but for vastly different reasons.
Yeah.
No, I agree. No, but it's like, it's fun because, like, I probably won't play Magic Online. Like, let's just put it like that. I like physical cards. And when we started doing this podcast, like a few years ago, or when I jumped in on this project with Seb, I couldn't imagine like Premodern actually becoming a Magic Online format. Like that was not in my consciousness. Like no, but now here we are, and it's time that we actually do a digital Magic episode. So like stuff has really happened. Like we're in a new wave of Premodern. A new generation of Premodern. And I mean, it's cool. I still think MTGO sucks, but I do enjoy the content that comes out of it. And I do think it's super sweet that we get like Swiss tournaments that can be run like globally through it. So like there's definitely a lot of pros with MTGO.
But, absolutely.
But like, so basically, there's more people playing more expensive deck. That's the biggest difference between the like paper Magic and online Magic. But also that there's like movement in a different way. I'm gathering from what you're saying.
Yes.
Will, that like people could 1 week everyone could be playing one sort of deck because it's easier also in that sense just to play whatever you like, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yep, there's very little barrier to playing whatever deck you would like is probably the biggest difference between paper and IRL. And that leads to sometimes a more top-heavy, spiky field in an online event because you can play those decks easily. Mm-hmm. You could have, in theory, everybody can go play elves if they want to, or you know, if land tax was still like Parfait or something like that, like you can go do that. Whereas if I wanted to pick up and I wanted to go play Grow a Tog at the next Interreal event, I have to go, okay, how am I going to source all these Mox Diamonds? I don't know, maybe. there is that. But overall, I think outside of the clumping of decks like that, the metas aren't that different, if I'm honest. I think you still expect the same top decks. You still expect the same powerful decks. It's just you sometimes see clumpings of them powerful, more powerful decks more often than you would in paper.
Well, that's cool. And we'll see who wins the PSL in like, I guess this episode will come out in a few days, but so the finals will not have been shown yet.
They will not. The finals should be, if all else, you know, stays the same. I look at my calendar here. We are, as of recording, we're doing this on the day the quarterfinals and our win and in are coming up. So the finals should be on the 24th of March is when the finals will be. The semifinals and the finals will be on that day. So, yeah, we're coming to the end of it. And you had mentioned, you know, are these players playing for something? In theory, they are. Fame and glory, yes.
Yeah.
No, there is no actual prize for it. However, I can't remember what my wife calls it. My way of showing appreciation and love is through gift giving. How about that? Is the simplest way I can put it. Is I got a piece of art commissioned by a very nice altruist out of Minnesota that is a combination. If you can think of something akin to Infinity Wars or like the big scene where they're charging at each other, like two sides charging at each other. And somebody actually brought this up to me. I didn't realize they actually did this kind of similarly with the Elves versus Goblins deck when they used to have the dual decks back in the day. Yep. It's iconic pre-modern elves and goblins all in this battle rushing at each other. And it's got things like, I think like a Priest of Titania, like headlocking a siege gang commander.
And yeah, I saw it. Yeah, it was awesome.
It's like a dead lackey on the ground. There's a random powder keg in it. Yeah. It was a fun thing to do that playmats will be printed up for them and sent to them. That hopefully, and it says, you know, PSL 2024. And I'm hoping that People enjoy it. People ask questions about it. And the dream would be to have my copy that I'll get for myself signed by everyone eventually. But that's probably a task. But that is the only thing outside of being able to say I'm a PSL champion. I've done well. I'm showcasing the community that they are getting. And everybody gets that. Mm-hmm. And that was a conscious choice I made. At the beginning, I thought there should be a prize for them. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I just said no. It doesn't. That's not what this one is supposed to be about.
The best prizes are like the memory, like memorabilia and like getting a playmat. That's fantastic.
Yes.
A custom made like event playmat. That's huge. I love that. Yep. Will, so.
And that's where I land on that one. I mean, I'm you know, these conversations will be had later when we get in. And I'm looking forward to that conversation. Prizes are fine. Cash is fine. In-store credit is fine. But this is not that event. That's not what this is.
Yeah. Final question before we change subject, because this seems like a recurring thing on the Magic Online events. Why are people allowed to change decks after like they finish a Swiss or whatever around robin and then they go to playoffs? Now you can bring another deck. Why is that?
So some of it was, at least in my particular case, is I like the switch in flavor. So maybe somebody was playing a deck in the pods that were like, and by the way, before they submitted decks, they also knew what pods they were in.
Yep.
So they could kind of meta towards who was in a pod if they wanted to. Or if like, if you're in a pod with Stanley Chen, what's he probably going to play?
Yeah.
You know, not a lot of people actually did that, which was kind of interesting to see. So that's cool to see. But it's an opportunity to let you figure out I'm playing against these guys so I can change it up. It's an opportunity to show more decks, different decks. And the option was always there. Like, you can keep the same deck. You don't have to choose another deck. You can stick with the same deck. So I just thought it was an interesting part of it to shake it up a little bit.
But it's the same thing with the MOS, right? Like, you get to change when you go.
To an extent. So the challenge is you don't. That's straight Swiss through. You can't change decks.
Okay. Yep.
And the reason I think you can change decks between, you know, the various showdowns, the bi-weeklies, is because there's such space in between them. Like, they don't all sequentially go together, so it's kind of going to be hard to track who played what deck in it. I guess it's harder to do, would be my opinion, and I don't know the full answer. That's just my guess. And also, it's, you know, letting people change decks, I don't think matters all that much if outside of a Swiss event, because none of these other ones outside of the challenge is a Swiss event. So it's like, I've played pickup games. Okay, I can change it. It's not really affecting anything. As long as, like, I'm in a showdown or I'm in the challenge or whatever, and I'm playing, or the weekly, bi-weekly leagues, and I'm playing the same deck, that's where it is. Like, you shouldn't – I've only heard of one time where somebody, like, played in a weekly league or bi-weekly league and, like, changed decks in the middle of it, and that's kind of like, don't do that.
Don't do that. No, but it's like I hear you, and I mean, that's a fine argument if you want to just have that
possibility.
Flexibility or possibility, yeah. But like, it's always come off weird to me. Like, I've seen the same thing in legacy leagues and whatever. It's like, and then they publish a top eight of the showdown champions, and like, yeah, okay, the finalist actually just won 3 games with that deck, but the deck that took them to the playoffs was like another deck that they actually went 5-0 with, but that deck doesn't get recognition or whatever. So like, it's always been a bit weird to me, but like, I mean, it's fine, I guess.
I certainly have, and I say this with all the love in my heart for the MOS and the people involved, I sometimes have a hard time following who's doing what, what's going where, and all of that. I think the pre-modern series website that I can get you the link for was put together really well to answer those questions. I think this was an essential step with how this has gotten bigger, that something almost like that was put together. But even with it, it can still be, how does this get together? Who's doing what? And I appreciate deck lists of all sorts.
Even the new border.
Even the new borders. Yes, indeed. It's. I don't know how do you compare a posting of weekly lists, like a weekly or biweekly event of your top whatevers on TC Dex, and weigh it against a 30-person Swiss event. Yeah. What is more valuable information to have? Because in theory, now, I don't think it happens. I hope it doesn't happen, but I don't think it happens. Is if I'm on there, since I'm typing in the chat, like I'm looking for a game, or you're using the tag for those who are involved, I could see Fran's open for a game. Maybe I don't want to play against Fran.
Yeah.
I back off. Maybe people do that. I don't think they do. I would hope they don't. I just don't know how you weigh a pickup game system with a Swiss system.
Yeah, I hear.
And I feel sometimes that like that about the monthlies too. Like outside of getting to like the top 16, sometimes you can have a pod that's like, it's a pushover pod because all my matchups are great. And then sometimes it's a pod like, none of these matchups could I ever possibly win.
No.
So it's
hard.
Weird.
Like logistically. Yeah. I hear you. But like, still the norm is straight Swiss tournament play, I guess. But like, we do what we got to do on this online thing that isn't a one-day event. So yeah.
We do our best.
It is. Yeah, indeed. For sure.
I guess we have time for, because we're diving a bit deep into each topic, I guess we have time for one-ish topic, even though we have a lot of nice stuff to talk about more.
I can always come back another time, don't worry.
Yeah.
No, but let's do it. Let's
rush to anything, so.
we breached on this already in this conversation, but like, since you're here, Will, we talked if we should talk about like the competitive pre-modern versus like the casual pre-modern, or the, I don't know, the casual competitive pre-modern, whatever. Because like when you came in, you were pretty like, you pushed for rankings and you really wanted to like make basically pre-modern worlds and stuff like that. And where are you now, like in that view and thoughts on?
What I would say is I've probably toned down a little bit because I think I gained perspective to some things. Okay. Me as a person, I would not classify myself as an overall like competitive person, I guess, in overall just generally in life. But when it comes to something I'm passionate about that has a competitive aspect, like I don't need to win everything in life. But if I am passionate about, say, pre-modern, I would like to win. It does not destroy me to not win, but there are times, like I will use a very recent example. I was in the finals of a showdown online against Tom. He was on Devourer, I was on Stasis. That matchup went very badly for me, partly because of misplays, partly because of a misclick, partly because he had a great deck. Yeah. I, even though Tom is a friend and I love Tom to death, I am happy it was online and there was no face and anything, because I was sitting at my desk. I was slamming my fist on my desk. I was visibly upset.
Oh, shit. Okay. Yeah.
Because I wanted it. And it's not because I didn't want Tom to have it. It's because I was making mistakes. I was misclicking. I just not performing well. And that, even though I've put a lot of work into it, it's not a side I enjoy, but it is still there. I've had that plenty of times. I was in the Misty event, the last one I had a chance to kind of top it, and I won it, but I was playing against Jeff Green in the finals on Goblins. And I, even though in hindsight, it is recognizable by plenty of people who have now told me that it was correct, at the time, I Hydro Blasted a Mog Fanatic because I thought it was a lackey.
Yeah.
And I took my glasses off and I threw them on the table and I waited for my turn to get up and walk away. So I have a drive there to win. You can have an argument whether that's healthy or not. I think an amount of it is okay. It's how, again, we talked about lines. So in regards to something like rankings, I would still be up for a ranking thing for something like the challenges online, something that is Swiss based that you can actually have data for, right? Like it's Swiss rank, you're gaining points, and I have that. I have a player of the year going for the challenges. It's nothing crazy, but it's like, hey, you win, you do this, and it gets added. It's nothing crazy. But I don't think there's a possible way to do it on a world scale like I initially tried to do, in that I think TC Dex, the guy who's running it, still kind of does a little bit. I don't think there's a fair way to do it, I guess, is my biggest complaint with it. Is not that it can't happen, not that it can be done in a way that's fine for people, but that it can't be done fairly in a way that makes sense, and how do you weigh everything?
Yeah, the logistics is, of course, impossible to make it fair. But let's just keep... I'm thinking more of like what it represents, or like the moral of doing it. So like I have my view of this, but I want to understand this side better. So like I'll let you talk, and I will ask some questions back. But like
So is it fair to say, and I get this from a lot of people who played Magic during this era, when these cards were fresh, the system in which a lot of us came up with was at some times not very nice. There was a lot of, I've heard stories, I never ran into it, but I've heard stories of shady people, of win at all costs, of all things like that. And for a lot of us, even though we enjoyed Magic, that maybe was not our favorite way to play and left a lot of bad tastes. And I think over time, there with a lot of the community, the people who got into the community initially were looking for a place to play these cards without that atmosphere. That was one of the big draws.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that accurate to say?
Yeah, for sure.
I think part of the reason, and I'll come at it from this way first, where people who would classify themselves more as casual, and casual not meaning don't want to win, it's like, you know, I win, I lose, cool. I'm here to be with the friends and for the atmosphere.
Yeah.
When they see somebody being super competitive, it brings back the feelings of like, man, this just doesn't feel good because the atmosphere isn't right. You can tell.
Yeah.
And that's where I will fault some people who are competitive. I think there's a healthy competitive, and I think there's a toxic competitive. Yeah. Like, I know you are competitive. I know Tom is competitive, Fran is competitive, but they can do it with a smile on their face. I've run into people who are competitive who just grimace at you. Oh, what are you doing? Can you play that? I've run into people like that, and it's crap. I hate it.
I think if I may jump in on this,
always.
Like, because I think this is like the deal breaker why people have reacted upon this. Like,
sure.
I just saw a documentary about a fly fisher guy who represented the Swedish national team in fly fishing 15, 20 years ago when he was quite young. And it's like everything that he did was like, I'm gonna win. So like it became a work task. He did enjoy fishing, obviously, but like as soon as he didn't win, he didn't see the joy anymore. Like, so he like he phased out a little bit, took the like bird perspective, and it's like, what am I even doing? Like, this was my hobby. I started doing this because I loved it. Like, it was refreshing. It was like I relaxed. I it was great getting a fish. Now it's just about, you know, winning. Like, I can't accept any losses. And so he just he completely vanished from the competitive ground just so he mm-hmm. could enjoy nature again. And like, I think that's a lot of the things you say about pre-modern players. Like, we are generally older, like mm-hmm. mid-30s or 40s or whatever, that have played this type of, you know, competitive Magic where like rankings actually mattered. And like, mm-hmm. if you want to qualify, you have to do this and this and this. So having a space where like winning doesn't matter, it doesn't become a setback. It's like more, it's a learning experience if you lose. Like, you could mm-hmm. choose to see that. Like, I think that is what a lot, including myself, have like reacted on, like this pushing for super competitive. And it's not like we're not competitive. Again, we want to win as well, but like not mm-hmm. getting to that industrial feeling of a hobby again. Like, we're mm-hmm. still like casual but competitive. Like, mm-hmm. So it's good to have this conversation civilized.
Yeah.
And I'm not yes. blaming you or anyone mm-hmm. else who really wants to win or get like salty as fuck because they just lost mm-hmm. a game due to like a mistake. But I will say, I think it changes the perspective, even if you don't like see it yourself. Like, I want to ask you, Will, mm-hmm. since you did the PSS last year and you interviewed all the PSS players, mm-hmm. And I remember you saying you were quite like disappointed in yourself. You had put like mm-hmm. this pressure on, and you didn't go to playoffs, and like that was like pretty, I don't know, heavy stuff for you. Like, mm-hmm. do you want to comment on that? Like, how?
Yeah, absolutely. I will comment on that. So that a lot of this has to boil down to, for a person and their personal stance on many things, what is acceptable to you? And before I jump into that, I'll kind of make one more stance or comments on like casual competitive. Is, I think, and I've said this to you before, is I think these two worlds can just coexist together just fine.
Yeah.
I think there is a necessity, like when I'm building an event or if I'm looking at an event, I would like, I guess if I'm, this probably leans more towards the competitive side, like in a description of an event, because of this, it's like, I would love, some of it should be ingrained just because of how an event is structured. But like, if I run an event, it's like, this is meant to be, I'd like to give a heads up to the community. Like, this is meant to be a competitive, spiky event. This is the atmosphere that it's going to be. And then I let a person choose. Or do they feel they want that atmosphere or not? I wish there was a better way to clarify that for all events. There's not. But yeah. I think sometimes you can clarify that by like, you can make an assumption. If I'm going to a 1 or a 2K in general, mm-hmm. like, and they've happened, is you can probably assume that a great number of people there are going to be spiky and very competitive. And you can probably assume that's probably the atmosphere. Whereas a monthly, you could probably assume it's still competitive. Like, Rich Shea still wants to win the monthly. But it's, you can banter with your opponent. And if you're going to be salty about that and you lose, you need to remove yourself. You can still be courteous. You can still say good games and just excuse yourself. I've had a lot of times where I've done that, where I've struggled with this issue myself. I want to say I've never been salty at an opponent. I've been salty at myself. Is where kind of I'm at. But going into the, and that's kind of leads into the PSS, is yes, that was a body blow. Honest to God, it was. And maybe people agree that it should be or shouldn't be. But to me, this was something I had watched that I was greatly honored to be a part of, that I wanted to perform well at. And I feel like I let myself down with some of the decisions and plays that I made. And that was the devastating part. Not because I lost to Tom or I ran Fluctuator into Stifle Knot twice. It's because I allowed that path to happen and to be scared of, like, an example. I was, I think I was playing against Jeff White on Goblins in 1 week. And I had a choice, like, do I run, I can't remember what it was. Like, I had a choice to run Fluctuator into Goblins through the first series and save, like, Sly for Dreadnought. I was scared of looking like an idiot playing, like, Fluctuator on a stage as big as that to do it. So I took the matchup I was more comfortable knowing I was going to lose the next week. And when I didn't pan out versus Goblins or it didn't pan out, I think, against like Stasis versus Tom or something like that. I can't remember all the matches. Like when the plan fizzled or something like that, it's just like you get dejected. And so you don't want to lose on camera. You don't want to. And I had a decent reputation at that point of like I was winning a lot of Magic.
Yeah. And yeah, but that's why this is quite interesting to ask you about. Because I do you want to continue your point and I can.
Yes. And I'll address that point is I had gotten to the point where winning matters. I had had a friend in town, Ian is his name. I'm just blanking on his last name. Very, very big. Used to be very, very big in the vintage community. He's based in Madison. Why can't I remember his name? Anyway, I'll remember it. I apologize, Ian, if you listen to this. He had said something to me when we were talking. And this is when I was having a good run of success, where now that and people had would recognize a name at this point. And he had said something like, now that you have visibility, people, you are a person can look up to, can look to for guidance, whether that's a Stasis or an opinion. And that means, in a lot of ways, you have to be careful of how you present yourself, what decks you play. You can't just play willy-nilly off the wall BS because could it steer people in the wrong way of thinking about pre-modern or thinking about doing something? You are somebody who should represent the best at what you're doing. Like, even if it's a new idea, it should be a tuned idea. It should be an idea with legs, not just something I threw against the wall. You are visible.
Yeah. But this is the point. Now you're making the point. Like, at this mindset of competitiveness, like, do you hear that this might start to like actually narrow down deck diversity or like enjoyment of the game? Like, do you see any like risks with this type of, I don't know, wanting it and like getting the exposure that you win? Like, there's so many things I want to touch upon. You're saying it right now. Like, the success limits your way of thinking about deck choices, basically. You can't jam whatever you want anymore.
I think it's a possibility that it can limit you. Yep. And it did for a little bit limit me to what I was doing. But I will again, all routes lead back to Stasis. Stasis is, for a long time, I got caught up in exactly what you're saying. And there was a rut of a good 3 to 4 months there. It was just, I didn't want to touch it. I was angry because I wasn't doing well as I had been. Something was different. Yeah. The enjoyment was gone. Fine. We pull out of it by accepting that even if you're a face, even if you've done well and you go on a streak, failure is okay. How do you get up from failing? And I started learning that with Stasis is, obviously, I had success with Stasis. I love Stasis. I play Stasis a lot.
We know, man.
Absolutely. I was getting kind of tilting my head at whenever people did not seem to want to adjust anything about Stasis. It was Dazes. It was Thwarts. It was this. I'm like, well, let me try this. Okay, it didn't work, but maybe I found the one thing that worked. Okay, then you add that in and you build it. And as long as you're willing to fail along the way, but bring ideas into it, you can still keep that mind frame of being a face. Like, when I present a Stasis list to somebody now, and they ask me why Swords to Plowshares, why Temporal Adept, I can give a succinct reason as to why this matters right now. And I think because I've taken the time to still be competitive, keep that competitive nature. I want this to work. I'm going to find a way to make this work. That's good. There's a drive there. But the biggest obstacle was overcome the failure and the feelings of failure if it doesn't work. That's the hitch. That's the hill you have to get over.
That's the whole point why we're talking about this. Because like this is, I think the rankings, the like, the prestige and like pushing for that, like, okay, now you're a face, now you need to win more, like, it will inhibit you in your enjoyment and deck experience. And like, so the way you're describing this to me, it's like, it's great that you're like showing your vulnerability here, Will, mm-hmm. but also like that you did step back and you could see for what it is. Like, yeah, mm-hmm. a setback is a setback, but like, I learned something from it. I can now experiment and I can go back. And like, yeah.
but I don't think
that's the status I think most of us want. I just want to mm-hmm. Like, and there that it's, we shouldn't like judge each other for like losing a showcase event. Like, sure, that's bullshit. Like, we're here to, yeah.
But on the opposite coin of that, we should yeah. not judge each other for losing something.
Yeah.
I or anybody else, and I know you and Mike Flores recently had an opportunity to discuss differences, or that was aired. Nobody yeah. should fault Mike Flores for being as spiky as he is and if he wins an event. But I think there's parts of our community that are more on the casual end that don't want to hear about the, I spiked an event, I won an event. You get pushback, I think, on the other side.
Yeah, yeah.
So well, that's the other side. I don't understand. Like, you get pushback from, if you're spiky, you get pushback. That's
what yes, if it's like, yeah. if I'm coming into this, I've tested, I want to win, yeah. or, you know, I tested this long, then you get pushback. Well, it's just a game, you can lose. To some people, competitiveness matters. That ability to show that you are good at something matters.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
we shouldn't devalue that any more than...
Again, like my whole thing is, and I think like every Magic player basically admits it, everyone wants to win, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like being a spike, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Like, it's good that you become like a deck specialist, that you grind your deck. But like mm-hmm. the nuance here is like being able to take a loss, or like being able to like experiment with something new, just like find enjoyment of like going into something new, because you're not afraid of what it might look like from the outside. Like, okay, mm-hmm. now you didn't win anything for like 6 months, but yeah, okay, you're splashing white in stasis right now. Like,
mm-hmm.
that's valuable still. And like, I want both parts. Like,
mm-hmm.
And like, yeah, there's some like super hyper competitiveness with rankings that I fear will somehow inhibit that. Mm-hmm. But by that saying, I want to like state that love spikes. Like, I really think mm-hmm. it's great that we get super competitive players, but they should be able to take a loss, or like, that's it. That's just it. And I think mm-hmm. somewhere there, one community side will like allow that, and another community side will like mean that you're less comfortable in doing that. I'm not sure.
I have another feeling about the whole being spiky in a old school format. That's sure. what I don't really care if anyone is spiky or not, but like banging your head against the wall trying to solve something that is we have a ginormous card pool, so it's not set, but the tier one decks are kind of ish set. So mm-hmm. I think that's also a bit of a fool's dream, at least regards to deck building, that you're like, I'm going to break this format. I'm coming more from old, like 93, 94 old school. And that's seeing myself going through playing the deck and playing whatever, mm-hmm. clearly a solved format. I'm not yearning for Premodern to be solved, and I haven't seen it yet.
Far from it.
But I don't think in some sense, I think it's a fool's dream to try to like really break it and like, oh yes, I did it. And I was like, okay, it's not like we're getting any more cards. It's not like, what can happen? Sure, we can have a new ban, I guess, or...
But I think you're conflating the thing here, Seb. Like, I'm not equating like spiking with breaking the format. Like,
but that's part of it, like, also. Like, being if you're very competitive, you're like, I want to bring the best deck.
Yeah.
I'm trying to break the best. For instance, when land tax was banned, I think it was there's good reasoning behind it, and if people haven't read the Martin's blog about it, you can do it on the premodernmagic.com. He has really good reasoning behind why he did it and so, but that's the first time I've played against decks that I felt like, okay, this is a bit like old school in 394, like when people play the deck. It's like, sure, you can play that deck, and you're probably going to win against a lot of my decks that I like to play against, but sure, yeah. You could. That doesn't look fun to me. So I don't know.
Yeah, there's, I'm trying to think of how to put this. There's, I think one of our main points, Anton, that maybe, I think we might actually think somewhat the same thing.
I think so too, Will. I think so too. But
I think your, maybe one of your main takeaways that's different than mine is the showing of a negative emotion when you're losing or not winning Magic. Whereas I can see your point where if you can see a visibly frustrated opponent or they're salty about it and they've taken a loss in a bad way, I think that one is something that person can work on. That's something that can be worked on. Like, I've tried to work on it. It's an opportunity to work, but that does leave a sour taste. But it's also that the person, I think that passion that they're showing is good, is just not shown in the right way. I think it's how are we showing our reaction to things. Like, as I said, I've played against, I had the opportunity to play against Rich Shea a whole bunch. He was one of the first people I played in webcam, got to know him, an amazing man. But that guy wants, when he was doing Lantos, I don't know how exactly he expressed it, but to the effect, like, he wanted that deck to be the best. He wanted to break it. Like, but he does it in such a Rich Shea way. Yeah. Like, it's the reaction of how are you presenting that competitive drive? So I think we are both in there. We're both two players, or most people want to win. Most people, for the most part, are going to be okay with losing. And it's okay to not like losing. If you were in, say, the finals of LobsterCon, initially, I think if you lost that, it probably doesn't feel the best. You put in all day trying to win.
Yeah.
Like, eventually you're going to get there. It's like, hey, I got second. Or, hey, in my case, I got invited to the PSS.
Exactly. This is, you come to that stage now.
Yes,
okay.
You do. Cool. But it's that initial, like, let a person, it's a weird line of letting a person have that, God darn it.
Yeah.
And let them, and understand as an opponent how they might feel getting so close, or you ripped a top deck in a high-stress game. And it doesn't matter how casual you are. If you're having a back and forth for 20 turns in any sort of tournament environment, like, that's a high-stress moment. You're like, I'm so close.
Yeah.
It's how BK said something to me that has always stuck with me. It's like handling defeat or handling a situation with grace. And that goes both ways. Can I lose with grace and not be salty? And can my opponent let me have a moment of grace where they understand that, man, that's rough? I've had opponents like talk to me like after a rough loss. It's like, hey, I did this and that and this and you could have done that. It's like, not the time. You can see my face.
Yes.
It's like you have to see this and handle each other with grace. And I think that's the biggest thing is sometimes Spike players are just like, well, you should have done that. You should have done that. And I get that impression sometimes from Mike Flores. I've talked to him very little, but he seems like a very genuine guy. And I think he's just like, he wants somebody to be better. So it's like, well, I saw this. You should have done that. And I think he means things like that in a very positive way. Yeah. Some people can definitely come off as like it might be negative. Or if I see a person like, what's the opposite coin of that? Like, I guess I come into an event sometimes and I have a struggle time when I see somebody playing. They've paid $30 to play this event and they bring this pile that I know is absolutely not good against anything. But it's their cards. And I sometimes struggle with the, why did you pay $30 to do this? I guess that's the bad part of the Spike in me is like, you're
exactly, they just want to play and have fun, man.
Something in my mind doesn't compute with that sometimes, and it's something I have to work on. But I think overall me and you probably have the same view. It's just I think we just have a different view of what success sometimes is. You know, I would if I have an opportunity to play for this title, that title for whatever reason means more to me than it probably means to you, to some extent. I don't know if that comes off differently, but like...
No, I hear you. That might be so, but I mean, like, yeah, I want to win as well, but it's just not like the world to me if I don't, I guess. And like, but my point here, just to like bring back 15 minutes, is like, I'm glad, Will, that you have found the view now where you're actually proud that you got to play in PSS. Like, that's a huge honor. And
it is.
Versus some very great players, and yeah, you didn't win it, but like, fuck it, you were there, man. And
I
like,
was.
That's the important thing.
Mm. Yeah.
But I also like get me coming off as like a full hypocrite. Like, I've been co-organizing 2 Euros, which is like, we do not want it to be like a super, super like prize event where you can but like still we know like the prestige of that tournament.
Yes,
like of course being named the European champion, that's insane. So like of course people want to win it, so it's like it's super difficult to like how do we balance this. Like we want to signal that this is still a community thing, we're here to like enjoy each other, but we also want you to bring your A game, man, because like this is meaningful if you win. So
both sides of the coin in many sense. I agree with a bunch of what both of you guys are bringing to the table, and I think what it comes down to is that you, as a player, as a person, need to be comfortable with the not caring what other people think, especially, but also like accepting that I don't have to prove anything to any other person, at least. I think that's not a way to go about being spiky or non-spiky or whatever. Like, as long as you're having fun in whatever where you are on that whole line, it's fine with me. I'm never angry at a person being spiky, as long as they're also, as you're speaking about, like, well, you're graceful against your opponent in a sense. Am I meeting a graceful winner? I don't really care if I'm losing in that sense. And I haven't seen that, and I haven't met any people being like boastful or in any sense in pre-modern playing. So I think we should also, like, at least for me, what my experience, we should mention that it's in many sense, pre-modern and the whole old school scene is a like quote unquote safe space, because we have a lot of people have the same view on what they're doing there and what they want out of it. So, and that's really nice. I think that's why people stick around. And playing Magic is clearly a big part of it, but also having a community that like thrives in that.
Yeah, but this is also why like we're talking about this right now, because like this is obviously like elevating the competitiveness of a casual format, and I'm doing air quotes now, is like a threat to some... In some way, it's a threat to like what has been earlier, and like people are getting afraid of it or feeling threatened that like what would we push something away of like the casualness or like this. So,
if we go too far, can we go back?
yeah. Right, but like you said, you think this could work in coexistence, and I hope so too, man. Like, because obviously people, there are a lot of competitive people who want this. Like, they want the high stake events. They want like the extra drive for like becoming a deck specialist. But like, I'm trying to understand that. I don't want to be like, you guys suck because you want to win. Like, I'm really trying to widen my understanding here.
Sure. So I can... All right. I will express something that is purely just for me, and there may be people who have experienced this the same within Magic and general community. And so diving in on a personal level, growing up, I'm an only child. I didn't have siblings. I didn't have close cousins. So it was me growing up. And I was not the most popular kid by any means at school. I was a I was a kid who was picked on quite heavily and all the things that go along with it. So self-esteem issues for a long time build up in you. At least in my case, it built up a lot. And my defense mechanism was to do something, Anton, you said earlier, was not care what people thought. Yep. But when, at least when I developed that, and maybe others too, is when you develop that attitude, you may appear as if you do not care what other people think. But that never truly goes away. No, when I find myself in a position where I have, there's not a lot in life that I would consider myself very good at, or finding a niche that I'm very good at. Not saying I can't do good things, but like there's nothing I'm known for. I wasn't a high school superstar. I wasn't a good looking kid. Like I wasn't that in high school and growing up, right? Or even in adult life in a lot of ways. Yeah. I found pre-modern. And I wasn't even expressly great at magic. Like, I think my best thing before I found pre-modern is I got 12th at States once. I never top aided a PTQ. I never did any of that. I was never with a testing group or anything like that. So I found pre-modern with no expectations to find that I did well and I'm beating expectations and now I have a name. I've not had a name for anything before. That leads to an anxiety of somewhere deep inside me as I have this name, I don't want to tarnish it. I'm finding success. If I lose it, I fall off the edge and I'm back and right as and nobody cares. And yes, I have a family that I love and I have children that I love, but there is something outside of that that you crave. And part of winning for me is I craved the win. I craved acceptance. And there's a line when you get to with that, that you go over the edge where not getting it leads you to spiral. And that's where I hit probably that gap of time I was telling you. It's like I couldn't win to save my life. My ideas weren't working. And then PSS was kind of the creator. So it's like I fell so short of my expectation of where I wanted to be that I just caved straight into where I was before. I think I know some Magic players are like that. Not all, but some players were definitely maybe not the most popular. This was their outlet to be with maybe some like people. So there may be some of that for those who are very competitive in the spaces. They found an area that they excel in, and they're still working out parts of their personality to make that balance happen. At least in my case, I think that's probably true. And I guess, anyone who shows a super competitive side, I just want to assume – I don't want to assume, but I want to say maybe like they have not found an avenue yet in which they're feeling comfortable. And this is where they felt it and they were getting comfortable and they were doing well. And having a setback in there is rough. And even somebody who's super successful could have been successful at everything. And now they're finding a setback here. So I don't know what that leads to. That was just something that came to mind as you were talking. It's just.
But thanks for sharing, man. That's. Wow, yeah, that's quite deep, man. But
I don't know if it's deep, but it's
something. Yeah, but like it's I mean, sharing that publicly, like, that's quite personal, man. So
yeah, no problem.
But like this is the thing. Like, I think we want the same. Like, you should be safe in this community, right? Like, I mean, we're nerds and Magic players. I'm going to generalize. I think a lot of Magic players have been like bullied as kids, or like they are nerds. They are not the cool guys or whatever. So like you're coming from a vulnerable space from like school years, whatever. So it's so important to like that we accept that like it's okay to lose. It's okay to like have a bad day and like you don't. But I understand that, like, also when you. When you're in this like winning streak, like shit, that feels good. Finally, like being good at something and getting like recognition. Like, yeah, for sure. That's a drug. But
yeah.
Absolutely. Wow. There's many layers here to discuss. Thanks, Will, for sharing.
Yeah.
Oh, my pleasure. And I'll reiterate, I don't think you'll find many people who are spikes who are asshole spikes, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I've run into maybe one or two where I've seen like, yeah, you need to knock that off. But I think for the most part, this community is very safe. It's very welcoming. And I do think, going back to the initial point, is you can balance these two things. I do think it takes some personal agency, isn't the word. It takes something in the person's self to evaluate, I'm going to a 2K. Do I think that's really not going to be spiky? And am I okay with going maybe 1-3 with a brew? Am I okay with that versus a field full of the wings? I think there has to be in this conversation some, not just community, but it has to be personal. Like, what am I willing to jump myself into given the context that I see, I guess. And I think it is a thing that I sometimes maybe have a hard time showing a sympathy to somebody who goes to, say, a 1K or something with a significant prizing environment, and then they come back and say, man, that was so spiky. Like, everybody was just there to win. At some point, I'm like,
no. Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. I think it can't, most of it can be community driven. Some of it has to be personally driven and understanding what you're doing, what you're there for, and what you're willing to accept as a loss and what you want to go for. I guess I don't hear a lot. I hear a lot about community. I don't hear a lot sometimes about the person making their own choice of what they're comfortable with. Because to get a consensus among a whole community as big as this is almost impossible.
I think we unpacked a lot here, and it's good to get into why people are playing tournaments and what their goals are. And as you mentioning, Will, I think it's hard addressing being a tournament organizer or whatever. Like, where should we land on prices and other stuff like that? And I think there's a place for everything, and it's cool that the format is growing so much so that hopefully you can find that place at least somewhere.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because all places should exist, like there, or coexist. Mm-hmm. So like, less hating, and this also comes from like what you were talking about. Like, there are some spikes that gets a lot of hate because they're like playing good decks and they play good. Like, Fran is getting a lot of shit from like just random people who hates his approach because he plays a good deck, basically. And like, that's not cool to like,
it's not cool to hate either. People, man.
No, but like, it goes both. I guess like, I'm obviously like somewhere in between this. I want cash out competitiveness, but like, I want to understand the super competitive, but I also like want cash outs to not hate on that. Mm-hmm. And I don't want spikes to hate on cash out. Like, I think, there's a place for everyone here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
So thanks, Will, for
sharing
your side and like having a civilized discussion, because if we do this on like a forum, shit will
hit the fan.
It's hard to have these conversations when it's not, you know, either in person or as we're doing, you know, where you can see another person. Gets lost in typing. One thing I do have as a final note on this is, one thing I have changed on is what do I want to see a value of a spike tournament be at? I think I'm comfortable with how things go as like a 1 or 2K. I don't think I ever want to see anything more in prize money, in like physical money, that is like anything beyond 5K is probably the point where like anything over 5K to me, when prizes are distributed, could be, I consider, maybe not life changing, but a circumstance changing amount of stuff. I guess. And what I would want to see, I'll do 2 points, I guess, because these are 2 points I wanted to make in this conversation, is if there's going to be something that's high prizing, I would much prefer that money be put into tangible, whether it is you want to have a high stakes event, make your prize a playset of Mox Diamonds, not cash. You want the prize, talk to RK Post or Beard or whoever, get a very, very, very one-of-a-kind playmat. Like, I think I've come around to more tangible things of value, not something you can just put in your pocket. And that's fine if some people want that. That's just where I am.
Yeah.
But my view on how I want to see competitive Magic has changed a little bit, too, is, like, when I watch something for the competitiveness, I want to see the best gameplay I can because I learn from that. I see things I don't ever see before. If I had my way, all right, here's my hot take, so whatever
people take
say, whatever.
Take.
If I had my way, any tournament of Magic that is Swiss for pre-modern, and we're just use pre-modern, is as long as it is clearly, succinctly printed, that is evident to all, all pre-modern events should be, I'll say it, proxy friendly. The reason I say it, and I know people like my collection and all of that, mm-hmm. I get it. I look at competitive Magic, I want to see the best gameplay I can with the best decks, with the most awesome Magic I can. In that circumstance, card availability can possibly hurt the ability to see that. And I'll use an example. I knew a gentleman who had a foiled out elves deck. Like, you know, judge promo, survivals, create, like, all, everything that you can imagine, the most expensive thing possible was there. Like, buy down payment on a house with this deck.
Yeah.
Got sick of it because it wasn't playing well or something and moved on to something else, was not taking the time to learn it. And I think I had made a comment somewhere in my head. It was like, I would much rather watch somebody like a Ali Rod or a Pablo Suarez play a proxied, legible deck of elves through a whole tournament than watch something that's foiled out. Because I'm going to learn more and the gameplay is just going to be better.
Yeah, that this is a discussion I don't have time for
it
now, because
I'm
very against proxies, but I hear you, but I'm very much against it. But let's not dive into another.
That's
topic,
okay.
No, that's another, like, we've done one like hot topic today, and like that will suffice. Yeah.
All right, if you say so. If you say so.
So, but it was real nice having you on, Will. Hopefully people can check out all the upcoming stuff. I think we mentioned where we can find it, right? Throughout the episode.
I don't think I gave anything
by yourself.
Specific.
But YouTube. And yep. Where should we find you or the stuff that people should check out?
So all the live streaming would be done on Twitch. But if you go to YouTube, let me pull up the link because I don't have it up here because I'm a smart guy. It should be just I've Got Questions Podcast on YouTube. But if you just search in Pre-Modern Super League, I'll pop up. I don't think I'm popular enough on YouTube yet to have my own custom like name. I think it's still one of those generic string of BS things you have to type in. But if you just type in Pre-Modern Super League on YouTube, you'll find it. I'll go ahead and at the end of this shoot you guys the links if you want to put it anywhere or
I'll get some more work, but I'll put it in the show
notes.
Seven
show notes. Yeah.
I'm usually doing them, but
yeah, you're doing good.
I just want to add throwback to we had the other podcast that I started out with talking about old school. I had Randy on episode 13 of Flipping Orbs. You can find it on the I guess it's on all the media where you can find podcasts, but it's on the Wack Wack site also. I would like to the best episode I did there was with Keith, the misprint guy, Adams, episode 21. People should check that out if they love card history. I'd say he has the craziest stories about where the origins of Magic cards, and I think we even talk about the alpha playtesting cube that he has done. So that's
awesome.
So crazy. Okay, yeah, We missed a bunch, I guess, Anton, but...
Yeah, as always. Yeah. I mean, but I think it was important that we got the time to talk about one hot topic mm-hmm. in this, like, secure space, I guess.
And I was rushing it through a bit, but it's good that we had took the time in the end there.
We wanted to ask Will his own questions about overrated cards and underrated cards and whatever, but Will... We will pass that on to you to your own podcast. I've got questions, and you can share it with your next guest. You can do it like a
back and forth.
It'd be my pleasure to do it. But guys, thank you so much for having me on. For asking the questions, for having the conversations. I'm sure there will definitely be people who agree with all or none or some of what we all said. So I would be interested to see.
Yeah,
People's reactions and points of view to some of these conversations.
Yeah, stay loving and respectful, guys.
Send all the hate to Anton's email.
there it is.
At my page, you can get all the good things. Okay, so bye-bye, guys, and bye out there.
Bye.
See you later, guys. Take care.
Ever since I was a young boy, I played the silver ball. From Soho down to Brighton, I must have played them all. But I ain't seen nothing like him in any amusement hall. That deaf, dumb, and blind kid sure plays a mean pinball. He stands like a statue, becomes part of the machine. Feeling all the bumpers. The digit counts as ball. That deaf, dumb, and blind kid sure plays a mean pinball. He's a pinball wizard. There has to be a twist. A pinball wizard's got such a supporting. Plays by sense of smell. Always gets a replay. Never seen him fall.